Judge Durr from Douglas County has now joined the court. So, counsel. Mr. Zimmer, are you arguing today? Good morning to you. You may approach. And Mr. Wentz, are you arguing today? Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
We do not.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmer. Proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is John Zimmer. I'm with Klein Williams Law Firm here today on behalf of the judgment creditor and appellant, Florence Lake Investments, LLC. I would request to have 2 minutes be reserved for rebuttal. Your Honors, the question before you this morning is whether this court should permit a corporation to unilaterally determine which assets it must disclose in response to garnishment, and in turn, excuse it from liability for failing to disclose $1.1 million in judgment debtor assets. Nebraska law answers this question with a resounding no, and we respectfully request this court reverse the district court and direct entry of judgment for garnishee liability for two reasons. First, the plain language of Nebraska's garnishment statutes requires that garnishee liability be imposed upon Zoetis for its failure to disclose debtor assets.
Haven't we held that the language of the statute creates a rebuttable presumption?
This court, Your Honor, has held that Section 1028 has a rebuttable presumption of indebtedness if there's a failure to respond, but that's different from a rebuttable presumption of liability, which is actually required by Section 1030 when the judgment debtor was found to be in possession of assets. Well, I'm sorry, when the garnishee was found to be in possession of assets. So the rebuttable presumption goes to the indebtedness and not liability. And second, Zoetis is not excused from those disclosure obligations or garnishee liability under the statutes simply because it says it believed that the undisclosed assets were not subject to garnishment. This case arises from a post-judgment garnishee liability proceeding under Section 1030 and the accompanying statutes of Chapter 25 of the Nebraska Revised Statutes. After obtaining a $3.8 million judgment against the judgment debtors, Jason and Mary Berg, Florence Lake sought to garnish Zoetis to collect on that judgment. In its response to the garnishment summons and interrogatories, Zoetis stated that it had no debtor assets in its possession or control aside from wages. That information was inconsistent with what Florence Lake had learned from a previous garnishment of Merrill Lynch, which showed that Zoetis was in fact in control of debtor assets in the amount of $1.1 million that had been deposited into Jason Berg's 401k account. So Florence Lake proceeded with garnishee liability proceedings under 1030.02. And the language that governs these proceedings provides that if it shall appear upon the trial of the liability of the garnishee that the garnishee was indebted to the defendant or had property or credits of the defendant in his possession or under his control at the time of garnishment, he shall be liable to the plaintiff.
Does our evidentiary record include any evidence as of the date of service of the garnishment of Mr. Berg's age?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor.
And does that make any difference?
It does not, because the clear evidence, which is uncontroverted on the record here, is that Zoetis was in fact in control of the assets while they were deposited in the 401k account.
Subject to federal law.
Correct. Yes, subject to federal law, Your Honor.
But that's the argument by Zoetis, is they're not really in control because federal law says they can't do certain things with those funds.
They have asserted that federal law provides that the funds are not ultimately subject to garnishment. And we didn't get to the question of garnishability and exemption at the trial court below because Zoetis failed to disclose the assets in the first place. That question was before the bankruptcy court, which denied the exemption to the Bergs. And again, you know, the Bergs did not claim an exemption here in these garnishment proceedings.
Did the statutes give the district court judge in this case some discretion as to whether or not to enforce the statute?
It does not, Your Honor. Section 1030.02 plainly states that if the garnishee is found to be in control of the assets, he shall be liable to the plaintiff.
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller-Lerman. Could you expound a little bit as to what your understanding of control is? Is it a temporal concept rather than, I say, a potential legal concept? The latter of which would be, we are sitting on this account, but if you fast forward, there might be a problem turning it over under federal law. So what does control mean?
Certainly, Your Honor. The control in this case, I think the plain definition of control would indicate the ability to influence, and there are different potentially types of control. Zoetis
is a control here, turning the monies over. I mean, isn't that the control that the statute's talking about?
I don't think necessarily, Your Honor. So the question of the meaning of control is, I think, the plain language of the statute speaks in terms of whether the garnishee was in possession or control. Control indicates that the garnishee has some power to influence, of influence over these assets.
Influence to do what?
I think there are different indications of control. Here, the statute just says control, and the evidence on the record shows that there was control. Zoetis's counsel at trial indicated and admitted on the record that there is a certain amount of control. And so the statute doesn't necessarily speak in terms of plenary control in all respects. There might be some limitations on the control that could be exercised, but here we have control. And that was clear from the record from Merrill Lynch's garnishment responses, which were sworn under the statute and which state that Zoetis, as plan administrator, had the ability to freeze, restrict, or turn over the funds.
I beg your pardon. I do want to go back to the control. Does the record show control, whatever that means? Is it temporal? Does it matter if this is a discretionary account? That kind of thing in the moment, rather than the consequence of turning it over?
The question that this court has formulated the test for garnishee liability, Your Honor, is at the time of garnishment, was the garnishee in possession or control of the assets? And so
doesn't the test include that the judgment debtor has to be entitled to the funds? It's not just control, it's the judgment debtor has to have the ability to reach those funds, correct?
The judgment debtor needs to have an interest in the funds, Your Honor. They need to belong to the debtor. And in this court's opinion in Myers against Christensen, it formulated the test as garnishee liability lies where the debtor could recover those funds against the garnishee. The clear evidence at trial, which demonstrates that Zoetis had control of the funds, also demonstrates that that test is satisfied. The plan summary description shows that the assets in question belong to Jason Berg, and that he could take withdrawals from the account at any time for any reason. And so the funds were unquestionably Jason Berg's, and while they were held in deposit on the 401k, Zoetis had control over them as plan administrator.
Well, is our case law, please correct me if I'm wrong, that these assets could never have been reached because of federal law. So I, the district court judge, am not going to punish Zoetis, who may have been in control or may not have been in control, but it's harmless error, in essence.
I think it's not the case law, Your Honor. In Spaghetti Partnership against Wolf, the court did impose liability for even exempt assets that wouldn't be subject to garnishment, including exempt wages.
Is that held discretionary on the part of the judge?
It is not under Section 1030.02, Your Honor. And so the statute does require that disclosure. Otherwise, they would have a garnishee liability trial at at every garnishment just to see what was not disclosed.
Isn't the concept of whether funds are exempt analytically distinct from whether a garnishment is prohibited under a federal statute?
No, Your Honor.
And why not?
The same protection from exemption in bankruptcy would be the same protection from collection here. Nebraska's garnishment and exemption statutes in 1563 incorporate those same protections. I would reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wentz, good morning to you.
Morning, Your Honors. Ken Wentz appearing on behalf of the garnishee appellee Zoetis. Your Honors, the question before this court is this a $1 million mistake? That's what the issue is here. The trial court said no. Nebraska case authority says no. The Employee Retirement Income Security Act says no. And there's been no prejudice and no harm to Florence Lake, and this court should say no. Florence Lake has a $4 million with interest, probably up to $5 million now, judgment against Jason and Mary Berg. Florence Lake wants to collect that judgment. We get that. Jason Berg has a $1 million plus 401k account. But the 401k account is set up under the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA, which means that Florence Lake cannot touch that asset while it's in there. When sent a garnishment summons, Zoetis filled it out. It didn't disclose the 401k account. It wasn't some big plan to hide assets of that belonged to Jason and Mary Berg.
Are you conceding that it was a mistake not to report that?
I would say that if you ask Zoetis now if it was a mistake after being drugged through 2 years of litigation for not putting down a number by Florence Lake, I would say yes, or at least maybe. But it doesn't matter here whether it.
I beg your pardon. Is it the principle that you are urging? Is that a party situated like Zoetis is permitted to make a legal analysis of, say, ERISA or other statutes which might ultimately prohibit paying it out, that the analytical legal decision is going to be decided by the custodian, or if it's discretionary, those features? They interpret the law and say, this isn't going to get turned over anyway, so what the heck?
No, that's not our position, Your Honor. It's not up to the custodian. There's two parts to Nebraska Revised Statute 1030.02. Florence Lake is only talking about the first part, which says judgment shall be, or they shall be liable to the plaintiff. But then it becomes discretionary to the trial court, because then it says the plaintiff in such event may have a judgment against the garnishee. And that's what gives the court discretion here. And indeed, the standard, as repeatedly cited by this court in every single garnishment case that it hears, is that the findings of the lower court should not be set aside unless clearly wrong.
Here, I beg your pardon. Discretion. What discretion? I beg your pardon. Some gremlins in the audio. What is discretion to do? Decide if the funds should be turned over, or is there a discretion in the custodian?
No, there's the discretion lies with the trial court to determine whether the garnishee is liable, and if so, what amount, if any, of a judgment should be entered against the garnishee.
So it's not discretion of the garnishee to make a legal analysis. In a conventional case, the garnishee says, I'm sitting on top of all these assets. Here, Judge, you figure out what's actually going to be paid out.
That's correct. The garnishee discloses the assets, and then it's a war between the judgment debtor and the judgment creditor to decide what of those should be paid out. And here, the judge decided that the evidence showed that the amounts that Zoetis did not put down on the garnishment summons were subject to ERISA. This case begins and ends with ERISA, because the judge decided that because that money could not be touched under ERISA, Florence Lake could not have touched that money. The money was still sitting there, and it should not receive a judgment against Zoetis for $1 million.
Counsel, do you agree with your opponent that as of the date of service of the garnishment, Mr. Berg was entitled to withdraw all of the money, perhaps minus 10% for some sort of penalty?
Subject to the summary plan, you know, 30, 40 page summary plan description that attaches to a 401k.
That's in our, what we have in our record.
That's right. Yes. Subject to whatever restrictions and loan conditions are upon that money, Mr. Berg may be able to pull that money out.
So does that make a difference in our analysis?
It does not, because the money was not pulled out. If the court looks at the Spaghetti case, and if the court looks at the Peterson versus Central Park cases, in both of those cases, the money between the time that the garnishment summons was received by the garnishee and the time that there was a trial on the merits of whether that garnishee should be liable for failing to disclose, the court held certain money could have been touched. And because the garnishee released that money to the judgment debtor, and it should not have because it received the garnishment summons, the court held the garnishee was liable. But in the Myers and Schaefer Shapiro cases, this court held that the money was not something that could be touched by the judgment creditor. And because the judgment creditor could not touch that money, the garnishee could not be held liable because there was no prejudice and no harm.
So in this case, Zoetis has a great big pile of money that is subject perhaps to ERISA or some federal statutes, and you got Florence Lake looking for all this money. Is there any way that they could get this money?
Yes. The way that they get this money is when the money is released to Mr. Berg at some point.
Years from now.
Could be years from now. That's right. And once it hits his bank account, then that is not subject to 401k protections anymore. Because the money, it's not, it doesn't follow the money. It's while it's in this account that is Mr. Berg's, and it's a part of 300 or 400 other Zoetis employees. It's an employer-sponsored 401k. And that's why Zoetis has no power to withdraw any money from this account. If the anti-alienation provisions of ERISA are routinely held by multiple courts, the US Supreme Court, the Nebraska Bankruptcy Court, that says you can't touch a 401k plan benefit. And that's held in the embezzlement situation, like in the Guidry case that we cite. It's held in the securities fraud cases. It's held time and again. And in the In re Loomer case that we cite, the court actually has language that says, even in cases of actual intent to hinder, delay, defraud creditors, or preferential treatment to other creditors, such acts do not justify an exception to the ERISA anti-alienation provision. Now, I realize the one thing that Florence Lake keeps coming back to as well, it had to be claimed by Mr. Berg and he didn't claim it. But that's not true. The statute that they're looking at is a Nebraska statute. ERISA preempts every single Nebraska garnishment statute. And it's constantly held that ERISA preempts those statutes. So even though Mr. Berg didn't seem to have claimed an exemption according to Nebraska law, that doesn't affect ERISA's anti-alienation provisions here.
As the record shows that as of the date of service of the garnishment, the $1.1 million was in the retirement account and there was no pending request to withdraw it.
That's right. And that money, to my knowledge, still sits there today. And Florence Lake knew about that money. They'd received garnishment interrogatories from Merrill Lynch on March 10th. Of 2020. On March 11th, it sent garnishment summons to Zoetis. It's trying to turn the garnishment statutes from a mechanism to discover and recover judgment debtor assets into a way to hold garnishees liable for something that they couldn't otherwise get to. So they're trying to say $1 million, And then I'm assuming that once Mr. Byrd receives any piece of that $1 million, because as the court seen from the record, they're going to go after Mr. Byrd's horses. They're going to go after Mr. Byrd's wages. They're going to go after anything Mr. Byrd and Mrs. Byrd have. And
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller-Lerman. So are you saying, are you equating discovering assets with disclosing assets?
I'm not sure I understand that.
So Zoetis would have no obligation to disclose, this is your argument, Zoetis has no obligation to disclose because the creditor is trying to discover assets.
But I don't believe that's not our argument, Your Honor. Our argument is, should Zoetis have disclosed if it had control over the assets, then it should have written them down on the garnishment summons when it returned them. It mistakenly believed these to be wage garnishment sticks, and it completed them, as the record shows, as if they were wages. And so it mistakenly left this out. As the trial court held, it's not something that Lawrence Lake could have touched or Zoetis could have touched anyway. And
under the judge's discretion, the judge in this case could have said, Zoetis, yeah, you owe the $1 million.
That's right. But the court reviewed the evidence, determined that the evidence showed that this is a 401k plan benefit that is protected by ERISA, subject to anti-alienation provisions. And based upon that evidence, found that Zoetis, that a judgment should not be issued against Zoetis.
Under ERISA, as of the date of service of the garnishment, would Zoetis have had the authority to push the funds out without a request?
No, it would not have. Not under ERISA. Under ERISA, the funds are not subject to garnishment. So even if Zoetis received a garnishment request for the 401k amounts.
Could Zoetis have terminated the plan and pushed the funds out to Mr. Byrd as of the date of service of the garnishment?
No.
Under the plan and the governing ERISA statute?
No, because it would have had to terminate the plan as to every single plan participant, including Mr. Byrd.
I beg your pardon, could the administrator have participated in a rollover limited to Mr. Byrd?
I don't know. I don't believe so, because that's still subject to the ERISA's anti-alienation provisions, which courts time and again hold that they are not going to carve out exceptions to, and that would be an exception to ERISA's strong anti-alienation provisions, which protect that money and subject the plan administrators like Zoetis to pretty severe penalties should Zoetis violate that anti-alienation provision.
This statute seems to encourage full disclosure by Zoetis. Clearly that wasn't the case here. What hammer is over Zoetis in the future not to do this again? Is it the potential for liability based on discretion of the court?
It is.
Is that enough?
It is, and I think that the cases such as Spaghetti and Central Park show that if any assets that weren't disclosed are released to the judgment debtor between the time that that there was a receipt of garnishment summons and the non-disclosure, or even up to trial, then the penalty at which this court has affirmed is that there's harm, there's prejudice to that judgment creditor for those amounts. And like in the Spaghetti case, the garnishee there said, well, we should get the benefit of the only what he would have had to pay. And the court said, no, you should have to pay all of the amounts. And so that's the hammer that's sitting there. Your Honors, we'd ask that the court, unless there's any other questions, we'd ask that the court affirm the order of the district court and hold that Zoetis is not liable for the $1 million. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
19 seconds.
19 seconds, Mr. Zimmer. We are going to give you a minute.
Your Honors, the bankruptcy court decided the exemption issue under ERISA, and that was conceded through this appeal by Zoetis' counsel. The counsel for Zoetis came up here and for the first time, I believe, on this appeal, said that ERISA preempts every garnishment statute in Nebraska. That has not been advanced as a position before in this case and is inconsistent with the Supreme Court's decision in Mackey against Lanier, which permitted the garnishment of certain types of ERISA benefits and held that ERISA generally does not affect generally applicable state law garnishment statutes like the one that is before you today under section 1030.02. These garnishment statutes have worked as collection tools since statehood because they favor disclosure and they provide for enforcement mechanisms. Adopting the position of Zoetis would frustrate that statute and be inconsistent with its plain language by permitting any corporate garnishee to conceal assets without penalty.
I beg your pardon. So can you harmonize the state and federal law if the state says disclose it and then the federal law says, but it won't be paid out?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think the state law incorporates those protections under ERISA 2. In 1563, the exemptions for retirement assets under state law, it does include and reference those federal statutory protections. Here, the federal bankruptcy court made the determination as to federal law and state law, because in Nebraska, the bankruptcy exemptions are state exemptions. And so we never got to the issue of garnishability and exemptions at the district court here. And the reason we didn't is Zoetis failed to disclose those assets. And so those questions, although they've been decided by the bankruptcy court, are not before this court, because here we're on the garnishee liability statutory provisions under 1030.02, the plain language of which does not give discretion for liability. It provides two alternative remedies to which the creditor might be entitled, but it mandates liability just like this court decided in Spaghetti Partnership against Wolf.
Well, it seems like the district court got to that issue of exemptions by saying through its discretion not to hold Zoetis liable. Should we be sending it back for additional evidence or testimony on that issue?
No, Your Honor. The district court assumed that it was an asset that was not exempt, and Zoetis kind of inserted that into its argument in defense of liability. All of the issues here have been fully fleshed out at trial. And the question here is just as a matter of law, based on this record, which contains all of the necessary facts, whether liability should impose, and we believe that it should. For that reason, we respectfully request the court reverse the lower court and direct entry of garnishee liability judgment.
Thank you very much, Counsel. That includes arguments in Florence Lake Investments versus Berg. And that concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned and you are excused.